Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the weekly podcast, actually bi-weekly lately, for people who play with needles.
That's right. Because we can't get enough.
No, yeah, heaven forbid we just do it once a week. We've got to do it twice a week. So, but, our guest, let's get our guest in here and then I'll babble a little bit. But Nicole Neville.
Yes.
Is that right?
Thanks
Did I say it right?
Yes, you said it right.
Christine, check that out. I said it right. Nicole
Wow.
Neville.
Wow.
Huh? Yeah, that's what we call talent. That's talent.
Okay, so write this one down.
Yeah, mark it on the calendar last time.
The one where Gary said the guest name correctly. That's what we're going to call this week's podcast.
Yep. So for those who don't know, Nicole's needle work, right? Needles.
That's right.
Needlework.
Nicole's needlework.
Yes. Yep. And Nicole is a hobbyist, stitcher. And I've been watching your podcasts. I've seen them all. And, of course, we've needled. Ooh, that was a good pun. Needled Nicole a couple times about her bare walls. So.
Yeah.
and now the one lonely piece that's hanging on the wall.
Yeah, I have more. You just can't see them. They're on the other walls.
Well, move them.
Yeah, move them all to one wall.
Yeah, just pile them all up on one wall. Yeah. I do want to say before we talk a little bit more with Nicole, thanks to everybody who's been listening and spreading the word and had many people say that they are enjoying the midweek chats that Christine and I do. And I was at the my local chapter of Fox American Needlepoint Guild chapter meeting last night. Lots of people listening there. It's really neat that people are getting something out of these things and enjoying them and putting them on while they're stitching and listening. So thanks to everybody for spreading the word and listening, and we're glad you're enjoying what we're doing here.
Yeah, I've really been enjoying them. I went back and binge listened to all of them, and we actually have something in common. I was born in Flint too.
No, really?
Yeah.
So. Oh, what are the odds of that? No kidding.
I know. Yeah. We moved down to Florida when I was 10, but my dad still lives in the area.
So. Oh, there we have it. Because, yeah, my dad lives in Davison, east of Flint.
Yep.
And my sister in Washington Township. So I'll be darned. There you go.
Yep.
Another Michigan.
Yeah, I thought that was. Yep. I found that out listening to one of your episodes. So I thought that was funny.
All right. So you lived in Flint all the time you were there?
Yeah, we lived in like Grand Blanc and then moved around a little bit.
School.
But
see, I grew up Flint. In Clio, so Grand Blanc.
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, but, let's tell high school stories about sports and things. Huh? What fun. Let's just
No one wants to hear about Flint. The water's bad, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. That's what I have to tell people all the time now, is that I'm from the Flint area before they had lead in the water. So,
yeah. Right. Or maybe that's what happened to us. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the all-time great tragedies, though.
It really is.
Disgusting. Yeah. So, yep. Okay, well, let's just take that. So, in Flint, moved to Florida at 10.
Yes.
There's a culture shock for you.
Yeah. And then got married at 18, and my husband was in the Army, so we moved from California to Hawaii.
Wow.
Then Georgia, and that's where my boys were all born. And then he got the job with Homeland Security, and we moved to South Carolina. So.
Oh. Well, he's all government all the way, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Is that as tough as people say moving around when your husband's in the military? And that's hard to settle down, huh?
Yeah, thankfully he only had two duty stations, so it wasn't too bad. But I moved a lot anyway when I was younger, so it wasn't that hard. It was okay
used
for
to
me.
It.
So. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and Hawaii's not exactly, you know, that's not
tragic, right? Yeah. Like
no,
a hardship.
No, it wasn't. We loved it. We still talk about going back one day to visit. So.
Yeah, or just move there, yeah.
And it's funny because they have a great needlework shop there called Fiddlesticks. And that's really where I learned. I learned stitching when I was younger, but that's what really got me into stitching was Fiddlesticks.
So. In Hawaii.
Yeah.
And what made it great?
I had never been in a shop like that. It just had everything, threads and fabrics, and they were so helpful and just great people there and the patterns. So I had never really been in a real needlework shop before, just, you know, the craft stores. So.
Right. And it's a big difference.
Yeah, it really is. So.
How would you know? You don't have one anywhere near you.
Yeah, I'm not, in my imagination, there's a big difference.
Oh, okay.
Right? I haven't actually. Yeah, so I've tried, you know, I tried finding the needlework shop near here, and it just wasn't. It was a yarn store, you know. So I guess Everybody's really into knitting, which, you know, I mean, that's been true for a long time, but there's one more on Long Island I haven't hit yet. So I still have hope that there is one. Otherwise, actually, we were just talking about this off the air. I will find myself in the city in a few weeks. So maybe that's the opportunity to go seek out all the needlework shops in Manhattan. I can just do a little tour. How's that sound? Sounds very good to me.
Sounds exciting to me. Yeah. So Nicole, when you find this needlework shop in Hawaii, your husband's working, obviously. Are you working, or is the needlework shop a way to kill off the days?
Well, I actually was working at Walmart in the shoe department in Hawaii, so that was an experience. So, yep. But it inspired me. I decided to open up my own needlework cross-stitch shop in Atlanta.
Oh.
When I was only like 22, 23, and I really had no clue what I was doing. But
that's usually the best time to do it.
Yeah, we just decided we're going to try this. There was an old space for rent. My mom helped me fix it up, and it only lasted 10 months. It just wasn't the right location. It was in the middle of a neighborhood downtown Atlanta, and it needed to be like in a suburb where, you know, there was parking. There was no parking. You know, it was just, I didn't know. But it was a good learning experience.
Well, right. Sure that,
how would you know when you're that young, you know, because you don't think about logistical things like, okay, where are people going to park and how are, you know, how is shipping going to work? And,
exactly.
You know, think about distributions and, you know, all those things. So,
yeah, it was fun. I mean, I had a lot of fun, but it was a great learning lesson. But we closed 10 months later, and I had planned to reopen, but we just never did. And, maybe one day. Maybe one day I'll do it again, but
in Hawaii.
Yeah, in Hawaii. No, that's what I was going to ask. So even though it was only 10 months, was it a good enough experience that obviously it was, that you would consider doing it again?
Oh, yeah. I would love to, and I would know exactly how to do it right this time, since I did everything wrong last time. But, yeah, it was... It's definitely my dream job that I'd love to try again one day. So we'll see. Maybe in the future. The money falls from the sky, you know.
Yeah, sometimes that helps, yes. Yeah. Get all the kids through college, and then you can cut.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you really take on stitching in Hawaii. Is it what are you stitching? Cross stitch?
Yes. Mainly cross stitch. Well, mostly
I'm stitching cross-stitch. That sounded good, Gary. Well, that was really well phrased. Yeah, excellent.
Cross-stitch. I started, like, becoming obsessed with lavender and lace angels. And then, I don't know. I just loved them. I wanted to stitch them all. And so I didn't start small. I wanted to stitch all the big things. And then...
See, Gary, there's other people like that.
No, well, the stuff she stitches these days, some small, but you do quite a few big things.
Yeah, I love having big projects going. And now I love samplers. Those are my favorite, especially reproduction samplers. So,
yeah. So were you able, as the kids are born and running all around and everything, are you still able to stitch, or did you kind of have to give it up for a few years?
Oh no. When they never. You know how they when they say you should sleep when the baby sleeps? No, I was stitching. So
okay.
Yeah. No giving it up. I just kept stitching and nope.
Okay. Yeah, it's in the blood. It's in the blood.
Yep. I couldn't stop. So
has it primarily been cross stitch through all these years?
Yeah, primarily cross stitch. My mom taught me to knit, so I went through a big knitting phase. I then taught her like more stitches, like went on the internet and she only knew knit and purl, and then I taught her, you know, decreases and increases. And so I do that though. I'll go through phases where I only knit and then I only, you know, stitch, and I taught myself crochet and I'll only crochet, you know, so it's just like, I don't know why I'm all or nothing, but that's just how I am.
So the knitting and crocheting, making stuff for the kids, hats and mittens and things?
No, or, not really.
No.
I'm kind of a selfish knitter.
Kids can take a hike.
Yeah.
Well, you know what though, Gary? Because the thing is, like, kids, you know, you'll spend, you know, 8 hours knitting mittens, you know, with beautiful patterns and something, some beautiful Fair Island, you'll give them to them, and then they're going to get them muddy and nasty with snow, and then they're going to complain that the snow got through them anyway. So it's really, you know, I'm totally on board with the whole selfish knitting thing.
Yeah, I did crochet Afghan for my father, but that was it. That's really the only thing I've given away. Most of the time I just... I'm pretty selfish. So,
you know, I've knitted Jeremy amigurumi sea creatures. So, because why wouldn't you do that, right? That's not a weird thing at all. So he has a jellyfish, like a knitted, that actually is knitted. It's a knitted three-dimensional stuffed jellyfish hanging from his ceiling.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I take that back. I did knit my husband a scarf, but that was about it. And that was so tedious. I thought I would never finish that scarf.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty bad because it was gray. It was really bad. So, yeah, that was the last time I do that. So.
See, I use the gift blankets as a, gee, I want to learn how to do that. So, like, I want to learn how to do cables. So I'm going to knit a blanket entirely of cables because by the end of that, I will definitely know how to do cables. Yeah. And then Merry Christmas. It works for me.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say I was determined to learn how to spin. So I taught myself. I went and got the wheel and everything and taught myself, and I loved it. And then I was like, okay, I learned it, now I'm done, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I just go through phases like that where I love to learn and love learning new things. And then once I've kind of mastered it, I'm kind of like, okay, you know, back to my stitching or back to what I normally do. So
what's your thing that you always go back to then? That's your comfort place that you never give up?
Cross stitch, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it, definitely.
See, I got to switch around. Like, I'm working on this stocking for our grandson right now. It's all cross stitch, and it's going it's going really fast. I mean, I chose the right one because it's more than half done already. I mean, it'll be done here in another couple weeks. But I have to say, I'm getting tired of making X's. It's time to move on. Time to move on to something else.
I could make little X's, I guess, for the rest of my life. So.
Yeah.
That's what I love. So
hey, that's you know, a lot of people. They're happy doing that. Well, and plus, there's other than counting and changing colors. I mean, there's that whole therapy thing working where
definitely
get lost in the thread and let the day go by. Yeah.
Yep, that's very true.
Go ahead.
I was going to say you were talking about samplers. Are you doing samplers, and what kind of samplers are you doing? What do you like?
I love the Scarlet House. She's actually my friend Tanya. I've met her a couple times. She just picks out the best samplers, like her colors. She loves red and I love red. So, and also, GGR. She does some good ones. A lot of red also. I think I'm drawn to red. So I also like Plum Street Samplers. I used to do some model stitching for her before I started working full time. And she does reproductions and regular. So I also like, you know, just original samplers too.
So, how many of these that are your favorites are reproduction? I don't know all of those different designers. Are you doing a lot of reproduction, or is it a mixed bag of whatever strikes you?
It's probably mainly reproductions, but I do work on a lot of original designs too. So it's probably mixed. Right now, my whips that I have going are mainly reproduction right now. But it just depends. I'll stitch, you know, anything that I love and, you know, looks
and
good.
you fire through a ton of them. So do you try to find little bits and pieces of time here and there? How do you fit that in? Because I have trouble. I mean, I have trouble getting blocks of time. And
yeah.
And I'm learning that. I'm not learning because I don't do it. But if I sit down in the recliner at night, I never get up. So I force myself to go to my stitching area, and then I will stitch, and I'll be fine all night. But if I sit in that recliner, it just doesn't happen. So how do you? I mean, you just find wherever you can, whenever.
Yeah, basically. I mean, I take it with me. It's always with me. So if I get a, you know, if it's slow at work, my bosses are very nice. And they don't mind if I stitch a little as long as I'm doing my work.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, they're great. I couldn't ask for better bosses. I stitch at lunch. I stitch whenever I can. And when I get home, you know, I make dinner. I get my PJs, and it's stitching time. So my boys are really good. They're pretty self-sufficient, thankfully. So everybody's very supportive of me, so that makes it easy.
Well, that's great. So basically, you can have the evening to yourself if you want it.
Yeah, they're real good about knowing when it's mom time. So, and they're older. They're you know, 10 to 17 now. Gosh, I can't believe my oldest is 17 now. But yeah, so they're older, and you know, they don't need me as much as when they were little. So.
Oh, they'll always need you.
Yeah.
Yep. So what do you do with all these things? I mean, because every video you have, it's just this stack of stuff laying there on the bed or wherever you have them.
Yeah. I have recently started getting them framed. They sadly sit in a bin. My dad, he kind of pushed me. He's like, all right, I'm sending you some money. You're going to get these. And it wasn't about the money. It was about just me doing it, you know, because I'm such a process stitcher that, you know, I just want to stitch. And kind of when it's done, I'm like, all right, on to the next thing, you know. And I just, my mom, she's an artist, so she's the same way. She paints and then puts it in the closet. So I must get that from her. I don't know. But we're both kind of that way. But I'm trying to get better. I'm trying to actually frame them and put them on the walls. So
yeah, do that. No, but see, I relate to you because, I mean, the stuff I stitch, quite frankly, when I'm done, I don't care what happens to it. But my wife is the one who makes sure they get framed. And actually, I'm sitting here. I sit at the foot of the bed in the bedroom to record, and the Debbie Raleigh Diamond Delight 3 got made into a pillow, and it's sitting right here in front of me, and it came out beautifully. But no, the photography that I do, I have gigabytes of files of images that I've done nothing with, and I, you know, getting them printed is just, you know, I don't even bother. It's the process of making the photos and processing them in Lightroom and seeing what they look like. And then I'm on to the next thing. So I understand that whole process.
Yeah.
I really, yeah, kid you about it, but I really am in the same boat. It's just, yeah, okay, that's done. On to the next one. And whatever happens with that, it can sit in a drawer for all I care. Yeah.
But now the funny thing is, now that they're framed, sometimes I'll just stop and just stare at them and like, wow, you know, that's, look at that. That's really neat. I did that, you know. And so it's really made me realize it is nice. It is really nice to see them on the wall. So, yeah, I'm gonna keep getting them framed as much as I can.
It is amazing the difference it makes, isn't it?
Yes.
You just have that stitched linen or whatever, and then when it gets in the mat and a frame, it really is big difference. Yep.
Yeah,
it
really is. Yeah.
It's nice to honor the work that you've done.
Yeah.
Well, I'm writing that down. That was beautifully said.
You're welcome.
This is why we have you, for the deep thoughts. Yes.
See, if everybody met me, then they would laugh because, yeah, I can be equally juvenile. So I try to keep that to a minimum.
Yes. Well, that was touching right there, that little moment. Yeah. So, okay. And then I look back. I had to see when you started blogging. Mm-hmm. And I kept going and going and going back on that site. 2003 when you started?
You know, I know.
Lasts that long. Nobody.
My youngest wasn't even born yet, and my middle child was only like two, I think, one or two. So, yeah. I did kind of fizzle out at the end. And then for me, because I was knitting at the time, it was podcasts on YouTube. They called them podcasts. Knitters call them podcasts. So I started watching podcasts, and I was like, I wonder if I could do that. And I try, and I'm like, no, I couldn't do that. And, you know, it probably took me about a year to actually do a floss tube video. So, well, then it was podcast because I was only knitting. And then I started stitching again, and now it's just stitching. So I go through these phases.
So what prompted you to start doing the videos?
Just watching other people do it. And I was just, I don't know, I loved watching them, and I just thought maybe I could do that, you know? So that's basically what it is. I just thought I'd try it. Like I said, it took me a long time to get up the nerve to actually do it, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, your early ones, yeah, you're hesitant, and then as they go along, you get smoother, and now you just click on through them, yeah.
I still have trouble, though. Sometimes I'll be like, ugh. I don't know, you know, and I'll delete it and try again. I'm just very insecure, I guess, when it comes to that. I don't know.
I don't think that's unusual. I think most people don't feel comfortable being in the spotlight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they don't realize, I mean, you have to sort of take a step back and realize that everybody feels that way. And, you know, it's really not that big of a deal. But we did the same thing when Gary and I first started recording podcasts a million years ago. I remember the first ones just being terrified. And then every guest comes on and says, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. And I say, it's going to be fine.
I still get nervous. And I think because a lot of stitchers are introverts. I know I'm a huge introvert, so it's still a little nerve-wracking, but it kind of, you know, gets you out of your comfort zone a little bit, and so I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I never thought I would, but I do. I enjoy it.
I think people don't realize how little we, you know, when you sit in an audience, are you sitting there picking apart the person that's talking or watching the video and looking for everything they're doing wrong? No, you're sitting and watching and learning and enjoying it.
Yeah,
But when you are being recorded, you're imagining everyone sitting there doing all those things.
Yeah.
And honestly, Gary, and you'll understand this because Gary and I travel a lot together and to shows and things of that nature for our other hobby. And in all the lectures that I've ever done, and probably all the lectures that Gary's done, there's only one person, whoever would you know, pop up in the middle of a lecture and say, oh no, that's that thing you said isn't correct. there's one single human being that we know that would do that. And everybody else would, you know, is just really just happy to be you know, learning and getting something out of it. So yeah. we imagine people are critical of us way more often than they really are.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, people just, I mean, it's a hobby. It's just another, yeah. That's just another way to connect with other hobbyists. And
yes,
that's
yes.
right. Yeah. I mean, I love all the feedback. I love all the comments and questions. And I try to answer every single question that people may have, from the simplest thing to the most complicated. You know, I'll sit there and think it out and try and help them. So that's what I
What kind of questions do you get?
Oh,
the gamut.
Anything from like, yeah, where did I buy that? How do I start? You know, how do you not start in the middle? You know, just yeah, anything. Like, I can't think right now, but
so let me guess, upper left for you?
Actually, bottom right.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm left-handed, but I stitch with my right hand. So,
bottom right. Now you're that's the yeah. first one I've ever run into. Bottom right.
Yep, bottom right. And
does that give you the squidgies, Gary? Because like that's the opposite of you.
Yeah, it does.
It does, right? I can feel as soon as you said it, I could feel like the little bit of anxiety, that tension level building, because I know that that's gonna bug you.
It's funny because my friend Tanya, the designer of Scarlet House, she starts bottom right also. She's the only other person I know. She's like, yeah, you know, it's like you're building up, you're building blocks. And that's, you know, so.
Okay. So yeah, I might start bottom right just to irk Gary.
Thanks.
Well, I taught myself when I was 13. So there was no one to say, you know, this is where you start. This is how you do it. I don't use a hoop or a Q-snap. I just stitch in hand and do sewing method. And that's how I taught myself. So, yeah, wow. There's no one there to say.
No nope. rules.
Yep, no rules.
Love it.
So, okay, so take me through now, because I'm doing Orna Willis's new class where we get to go along with for a ride while she designs. So I was setting up the canvas last night. And so I put it on stretcher bars. This is needlepoint, but doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then I found the center and marked that with a thread. And now I'm ready to go. So when stitching in hand, then start out a new project. What take us through the steps, what you do.
So I just, I usually only use a 2-inch border on my stitching. I know some people prefer 3, but 2's usually plenty for me. So I just measure in 2 inches from the bottom and 2 inches from the right and just start right there in that corner. That's it. And I roll up my fabric. I roll it, you know, and hold it in hand like that. So I roll it from the left to the right.
So the work that the fabric that you're not working on is clean and out of the way?
Yeah, I roll it so the stitching is on the inside and I hold it in my hand.
Uh-huh, that makes sense.
Try and keep my hands as clean as possible, washing them constantly. That's about it.
So that makes it easy to go anywhere with what you're doing.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
I actually took my stitching to the beach Sunday. I posted a picture on Instagram and everybody's like, oh my God, I could never do that. What are you thinking? How could you do that? I'm like, I just, you know, made sure to keep it out of the sand. And that
That's a good tip. So. That's a good tip right there. Keep it out of the sand.
Yeah. I was in a chair that was higher up and it wasn't really windy. So it worked out okay.
Yeah, we're gonna put that down. Keep your needlework out of the sand. That's good.
We might have to have like an all-time greatest tips list. Yeah. I think we should start that, and that might be one of them. I think I like that. Keep it out of the sand.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to do some travel for work coming up, so I'm wondering because you know I don't have anything else going on. This might be a good way to do this though, because I can roll it, I can carry it on the plane to stitch. Mm-hmm. So of course my if anybody I work with was listening, they would be expecting that I would be working on the plane. But barring that, yeah. So what kind of a, like, what size canvas would be amenable to something like that for like a travel project?
Well, in hand, I stitch big things and small things. So there's no certain size for me. So I guess it just depends on, you know, the person stitching. But for me, there's no size. I stitch, you know, half yards. So mm-hmm. I take mm-hmm. it anywhere. But
Linen primarily?
Yeah, mainly linen. I love 40 count. 40 count's my favorite. Because I love using one strand of thread. I don't like messing with two. And I started doing that about 5 years ago and haven't stopped, really.
Yeah, that does eliminate a lot of hassle trying to make them lay side by side, yes.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah. Really does.
Just stitch and go, yep. Use silk primarily?
What's that? I'm sorry.
Do you use silk a lot or?
I probably about half and half. The project I'm working on now is cottons. But I do like over dyes. Any classic color works or weak dye works. And then silks, I like, you know, all the nice stuff. I do like silks a lot, but, you know, I'm not a primary silk snob or anything. I like cottons, and so I have probably about both 50-50 in my projects. So.
Yeah, but silk, I never got excited about silk till I did a couple of them, and then it is really nice.
Yeah, it is.
Good silk is really nice.
Yes.
It really is. Looks good, stitches nice, all those mm-hmm. things, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, cause I was really anxious to hear about your, your stitching area. I thought you'd be able to, and it's just wherever you sit down.
Yeah. Well, really... my primary stitching area is actually in my bed.
Oh, I love that.
I have a little, tray just with legs that fold out, and I put my Otlite, a little travel Otlite on there, and prop up like three or four pillows, and that's my stitching area. I think mainly because it's quiet. I can get away from, you know, the boys going downstairs and getting mm-hmm. snacks and TV, and, you know, I can just go up there and kind of hide away. And so, yep, that's my spot. And I also have a spot in the living room with the light, but mainly it's upstairs.
Pajamas in bed. Leave me alone.
That's right.
Yep. I like that.
After
I like
make
that.
Dinner, pajamas in bed. Yeah. Yeah, I have a shirt that says I like to party, and by party I mean get in my pajamas and cross stitch.
I like that even better.
So yeah. do you have coworkers that stitch too? Have you infected anyone?
No, I haven't really infected anyone. I do have a coworker that stitches. She doesn't stitch a lot, just, you know, once in a while, and she knits once in a while. And I recently met another coworker who does needlepoint. So we've been getting together at lunch and stitching a little. So our schedules haven't been matching up lately, but it is nice to kind of get away and meet up with her. And she's lucky, though. She works part-time, so she gets to get together with people in her neighborhood and stitch, but it's usually while I'm working. But it's nice to know other people that do needlework.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great when you could do that. Yeah. Yeah. That, well, like I said, I just had the Fox chapter meeting last night, and it's I'm the only male type there, you know, but just a great group of people.
That's all right.
They always have a good program, and yeah, I really enjoy. I look forward to the meetings because it's just like-minded people. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I nice. Have a group. We call ourselves the Carolina Girls, and they live in South Carolina, North Carolina, and we get together once in a while, and it's so nice to meet up with them. But sadly, it's not as often as I'd like. So, but it is nice to meet up.
Yeah. So when you're use a magnifier when you're, I mean, 40 count, you know, a lot of people say I can't see it, and
yeah,
a good light makes a big difference, but you use a magnifier.
I have magnifying glasses, and I use the strongest I can buy at the grocery store or the drugstore. So
so you just go get the $2 cheaters. Yeah. 4X or whatever. Okay.
Yeah, and I also have Magna clips that I can clip onto my prescription glasses.
That's a good idea. I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. How do those work? I've seen those. Are those effective?
Yeah, they work really well. You can get them on Amazon or some cross stitch stores carry them also.
It's basically what funny, surgeons, but... yeah, like yeah. what surgeons or people like that would use, you know, because you're not going to be touching your face. They're really helpful. I just never thought to use them in this context.
Yeah, and it, like if you have to wear your prescriptions but need a little magnification, it's nice. I don't always have to wear, thankfully, my prescriptions because it's a very light prescription. So I can get away with just wearing the magnifiers. So.
I just find that all that interesting because, Christine, you just take your glasses off, right?
So right now I'm sitting and stitching while we're talking, and I'm using a magnifying light. But if I'm doing something where I'm not actually using that, I'll just take my glasses off and look and just pull it really close to my face, and then I can see it perfectly clearly. So, I think there's this weird stage you go through with where you're wearing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you're – because I've had, you know, pretty spectacularly poor vision since I was a little kid. So then, yeah, once you – if you have terrible far vision and then your near vision starts going, then for some reason everybody that we've talked to has agreed that sometimes it's just easier to take your glasses off, and then suddenly it almost – because your eyes are so broken, it fixes themselves by being excellent magnifiers.
Your eyes are so
they're broken. Your eyes are broken in exactly the way that makes them great for needlework. So yeah, I tried it. I took my glasses off, and then if I pull the work really close to the magnifying lens, then everything is gigantic and I can see it crystal clear. So if I really, really need to see, so it's actually... It is as if I put on additional magnification, which is certainly not.
Find what works for you. I know a lot of people say they just can't do 40 count. And I mean, I can understand that. And sometimes you just have to keep trying and let your eyes adjust to it. Because I know when I went back to stitching after knitting for so long, I even convinced myself that I couldn't do 40 count. And I was just sticking with 35 and, you know, smaller counts. And then I'm like, well, let me just try, you know, some more. And the more I did it, the more I'm like, why did I think I couldn't do this again? You know what I mean? So you just kind of got to let your eyes adjust also. So.
I agree. And I think it's you also compensate. Like you get to a point where you realize that you don't. When you're first learning, and this is how I found it to be when I was first learning. I feel like I needed to see every little tiny detail. And then once you kind of get the hang of something, your brain compensates. So you can see generally and you're able to stitch perfectly well, even if you can't see, you know, the tiny thread that makes up the thread of the 40 count. Does that make sense?
Right.
Like you know that you can do just fine, even though you can't see, you know, crystal clear.
Yeah, you kind of can feel it too. Feel where it should be, and
correct, exactly. You learn to see with your hands a lot better. If that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely does.
Okay, I'm learning here. Well, ever since I got my magnifier light thing, I mean, I don't care what size I stitch on. That, you know, I can see everything, so I'm just fine with that.
It and I have to agree. I mean, that was pretty much a life changer for me too. Once I bought a light, just having because again, when your eyes get older, they don't take in as much light. So you really need to have quite a bit of light shining on the work to be able to see it. So having just a bright light itself just makes it tremendous. Why? So actually, the beach makes a lot of sense because there's tremendous light. It's you know. it's not unidirectional, so there's no shadows or anything. So in a way, it's kind of, as stitching outdoors is probably a great idea.
Yeah, it really is. I love stitching outside. Well, it's getting really hot here in South Carolina, so it's not going to be much longer. But for the last month, it's been really nice. I'll sit out on the back patio and stitch.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm.
So what yeah. kind of designs catch your eye? What appeals to you? Do you have certain things that you know, you see that, you always get it? Or do you just try about anything?
I think, gosh, I don't know. I love houses. So, like the Plum Street sampler I'm stitching now has a big brick house. And red, like I said, I love, in you know, if it's got color and, I don't know. It's hard to describe. I like, floral and animals, and so I like sampler type motifs, I guess, is what I'm drawn to a lot.
I actually was asking myself that question the other day, and I just kind of started looking through some of the charts that I have to see if there was mm-hmm. some pattern in what makes me buy it, and there wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't at all.
No. No, because, you know, I thought there would be the pictures were like, blue is my favorite color. So I would see a lot of blue ones, or I'd see a lot that were really challenging, or, you know, I was looking for some pattern and there was nothing. It was just this random collection of stuff. But I could tell looking at it, well, this is why I bought this one. I like this right. look or whatever. And so now I'm curious what other people find interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. Whatever appeals to you, you know. Yeah, I think for me it's the samplers, the motifs. And yeah, I do have a lot of patterns with red, so I'm thinking that's really what's drawing me to it. I don't know.
Have you done black work with red thread? Is that?
No, I haven't. I love samplers, like Quaker samplers that are all done in red. I'd love to do one of those one day. Yeah, I do love the samplers that are all in red.
There's a whole quilting sort of style that's that too, is mm-hmm. red work. Mm-hmm. So you'd probably like that as well, because that's a whole genre of quilting.
Yeah,
is red work, and it's beautiful. And it does have a very sort of a very specific style to it too. It's not just the red thread on white. It sort of the style of the way that the things are stitched is very particular to that style of quilting. Yeah, you'd probably like it. It's very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's what you got. I was going to say to your kids stitch, but you have three boys. They probably, you know. Well, and you won't let anybody see your stitching because you hide in your bedroom, so.
Well, actually, last summer, we were at my mom's, and I have a niece and a nephew, and they were all bored. So I'm like, well, let's go get some Aida and some DMC and, you know, look for some little patterns on the internet. So they were like, okay. They all got into it, and my youngest, he likes things perfect. So when he couldn't do it just perfectly, he's like, oh, forget this. And my middle son, he actually caught on great. I mean, he was doing this Mega Man character and he was doing really good. And my niece really caught on, and even my youngest nephew, but none of them have stuck with it. But maybe in the future they'll go back to it. Never know. But, it was neat to see him stitching. So.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you never know. Yeah, they might pick it up.
We try not to do gender biases in our house. So
yeah, yeah.
they want to stitch, they can stitch, you know.
Yeah.
So
I find too here, it's whatever I'm doing is the thing that my child doesn't want to do.
Yeah, usually.
Right?
Yep.
Because then that makes it automatically uncool. So I try to do as many objectionable, unsafe things as I can do, because then that renders them.
Exactly.
Them like, oh God, you know, my mom, you know, she's covered in tattoos and she rides motorcycles. I don't want to do any of those things because they're dumb because my mom does them. So I know my son will not be on motorcycles or be getting tattoos when he's 18 because I've made them uncool.
Yeah.
See, well, there's strategy in this, right?
Yeah. Me getting married at 18 will ensure none of my kids.
Exactly.
Will do that.
See? There you go. You just have to take the things you don't want them to do and do them in a very
exactly.
visible way so they're like, oh my God, I can't do that. My mom did it. It's so embarrassing.
Yep, exactly.
Parenting by Christine.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, you thought I did all of these things because I enjoy them. No, no, no. I'm doing this purely for the benefit of my child. That's what it is, Gary. You hadn't figured that out yet?
I hate beekeeping, so I'll keep bees anyway.
Well, no, it's funny because we the barber that I take him to is called the Rockabilly Barber, and it's this kooky place. So it's run by all these guys that are, you know, kind of like 50s style rockabilly guys, like decorated with like Mexican wrestling masks, and it's this weird place, but they do really nice haircuts. So we go there all the time. And of course, all the guys are like covered in tattoos and whatever. So I'll go in there and, you know, we'll joke around and they'll be like, oh, your mom's got tattoos. You're going to get tattoos. He's like, no, ew, why would I do that? So yeah, now it's totally not cool. It's awesome.
Okay. I'm making notes here. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I wanted to ask too, Nicole, you say your mom is artistic. What kinds of things does she do?
She does oil painting. She doesn't really do it much anymore. She watches my niece and nephew a lot. She lives in Florida, but she taught for a little while, and she's really a really good artist. She does kind of the... in the style of the old Dutch masters with the dark and the light and beautiful paintings. But now she mainly is just watching my niece and nephew. And sadly, I guess it's hard for her to get the paints out. And she's got a lot of stuff that goes with that. But she gardens and sews. She's always sewed my whole life, sewed my clothes till I told her, don't sew me clothes anymore.
See, I'm not the only one here.
Sewed all her curtains. And I mean, she's always done that, slip covers. And so I grew up with her sewing around me, which is probably why I'm not a sewer. So it does work.
Uh-huh.
There it is right there. Yep.
But now, well, she does knit, so she did start knitting again. But she doesn't knit big things, mainly just dishcloths.
Okay.
But she loves it. She can stitch a bunch of them or knit a bunch of them and be perfectly happy. Yeah. So
when you buy a chart, do you usually buy the prescribed threads, or do you find yourself changing them up more often?
I normally stick to what they say, unless the dye lots are a little wonky, and then I'll kind of look through and see if I have something that might be a little better. I don't know why I have issues sometimes with dye lots, and but that's really the only time, because I usually like what they've done, so I'll usually stick to the colors, the recommended colors.
Yeah. Mm. So. Okay, now this is an area I wanted to make sure I asked you, because I've been really focusing on this, and Vonif, it's beginning, you know, this thing I have with beginning and ending threads, and with this stocking that I'm working on, Vonna Pfeiffer did a thing with the diagonal pin stitch, And I got to tell you, if I ever see the woman, I'm going to give her a big hug because I still weave at the end of the thread. I still weave it under, but it's so nice to do that diagonal pin stitch to make that first cross and go. And I really have become a fan of that stitch. So the question that I have is what little tricks do you have for starting and stopping? And
well, since listening to your episode where you talk about it, I started doing it too.
Oh, okay.
And I'm loving it. Yeah, when you were raving about the pin stitch, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start trying this more often. And now I find myself doing it all the time. And it's great because you don't have to worry about that and popping out or anything. So I've really been loving it. It's not anything new, but I love it.
That's great because it's amazing how that locks down. I mean, you can tell that thing is not going anywhere. And it's so simple to do, and you're off and running with a new thread. And I really like it. It's that's what's keeping me making X's in this thing is to me it's just been faster. I get started faster, and then the practice that I have, I really wish I remember who told me about it, of when you're done stitching at the end of the day to start the thread for the next. You know, start the next thread and make a stitch so that when you sit down, you're ready to go. And,
oh, that's a good idea. That's a really good one.
Oh, yeah. Try that. Yeah.
I've definitely taken it as I do that all the time now. And that's a great one because then you don't sit there struggling like, where am I supposed to be?
Yeah.
Right.
That's a great idea.
Yep. No, that's So now every time I sit down, there's a thread sitting there already started. Just start making X's and, that pin stitch. And then, the one that, I've got a couple of reproduction samplers. One of them is Nicola's that are on 40 count and I'm going to, she has the vertical horizontal pin stitch and, that she did a video on that and, for single thread. So I got to check that out too, because she shows how to end with a pin stitch. If you know, you're at the end of a row and you're not going to have anything continue on after that, then she's got a way, and I haven't actually tried it, of ending with a pin stitch and you can't see it.
Huh. And, I'll have to check that out too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great.
Yeah, I'm always loving, you know, learning, loving to learn new things. So I love that's good.
Yeah, I think that's the fun thing is, no matter what, just when you think you got it all figured out, somebody comes along with something. And I've got this ornament I'm working on, and I'm going to try Vana's with Thread Heaven or whatever with two strands, when you're using two strands. And I'm going to try her technique on that, and she'll go down from the top with the point of the needle, and then she comes back up with the eye of the needle. And so I got to try that. I tried it a little bit on this stocking but that's all pearl cotton. And, I mean, I was cooking right along coming up with the eye of the needle, but it didn't really matter cause I only have one strand. So, but that's what she does. That one video where she just stitches for half an hour without any, with just the wind chimes. You can see that she's just going down and coming up with the eye, and man, she flies. She really flies. You wonder how she gets all that stuff done. She is fast.
Yeah, she's very talented. All her finishing, and that's one thing I've just never. I mean, I can't sew a straight line to save my life. So I'm sure it just takes years and years and years of practice. I'm definitely not a finisher or sewer, so I give, a lot of credit to the ladies that can do that.
Yeah. I'd like to learn to finish ornaments. I mean, that looks like if you have some basic ornaments, there's two or three techniques there that you can do and be pretty sure that you're going to get a respectable job out of it.
Finish in what sense? Like, what do you mean?
put it, make it into an ornament or make it into a pillow or something like that rather than.
Yeah. You know, or she does like flat folds and like, it's just different little ways of displaying smalls, basically, is what they call them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. No, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And she shows you how. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She has great tutorials.
Upholstery and things like that, I don't imagine that that would be difficult. But again, I'm approaching it from the point of view of being a sewer and not a stitcher, right? So the sewing part, so to me, that's the easy part. But, you know, I'm coming from the backwards side of this, so I don't know enough to know that that's a bad idea yet. So,
Well, it looks, yeah. I mean, if you watch Vanna do it, it doesn't look hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously she's done, you know, probably 25,000 of them, but it doesn't look hard. The only thing that looks difficult to me is getting the cording attached so that it looks professional. But the rest of it looks pretty straightforward. And you're right. Her videos, her tutorials are really great. And she explains it all and. That's what I like about her. She's, you know, she's not holding anything back. If you want to do it yourself, here's how to do it. And,
exactly.
You know, yeah. But I think when these couple ornaments I'm working on right now, I think I'll send to her anyway. Here, Vanna, fix them. She does. Her stuff looks beautiful when she gets done. It really is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she must be doing a whale of a job because to hear her talk, she's very busy. So
yeah, she is. Back in it had to have been 10 years ago. We did an exchange, and I got one of Vanna's exchanges. So I do have a little piece of Vanna in my house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's absolutely perfect, right?
Oh yes, yeah. Absolutely. I can't even. I don't even want to know what I sent her. I can't remember what I sent her, but I'm sure it's not nearly as good as what she sent me.
Yeah, there's an exchange that makes you a little nervous. Yeah, yeah. Because no matter what you give, no matter what you send her, you know it's not going to measure up. Yep, doesn't matter. Yep. Hey, Nicole, this has been fun. Thanks for taking time.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just a stitcher, not a designer, and, you know.
No, it's,
but
that's,
I love what I do, so.
Well, yeah, and it shows. It's great. So when's the next video coming out?
Well, I did a quick one. It was only like 9 minutes long, and it just finished uploading. So it should be tonight. So, yeah, I've only been working on one sampler, so I didn't really have much to share. So it's just a like 10-minute video, but yeah, I should have it up tonight.
Okay, well, and then when people hear this one, it'll be a couple weeks from now. So
yeah,
there we go. So,
so
maybe
you might have another one.
Yes, yes. All right. Well, Nicole, really appreciate it, and keep stitching and keep making those videos. They're fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.